old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of... My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is Chalk Talk.
Black 88! Black 88! Hot, hot!
Football season is here, and the football talk never stops on Penguin Radio. We'll take a look at the NFL by reviewing some of last week's biggest matchups and moments from around the league, while also getting you ready for next Sunday.
Rodgers gets the snap. Blitz is on. Rodgers scrambles.
He's
left. Winds up. Rainbow.
He's got Cobb at the 10 to the 5.
Yes!
To the end zone. Touchdown.
We've got you covered on campus as well, as we will take a look at everything going on in the NCAA. From the rankings to some of last week's biggest upsets.
James, the lateral. To the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that?
And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Here is your host, Jeff Safford. And welcome to another great show here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We have a great show lined up for you here this afternoon on a beautiful fall Tuesday afternoon. I should mention, finally starting to feel some more fall weather, some cooler breezes, seeing some fall foliage. Good use of grammar right there. My grammar teacher will be proud. Just a great show lined up for you this afternoon. We're going to start the show with some NFL talk. Talk about the lame excuse of a football game we saw last night with the Monday Night Football game. Talk about, yet again, is it a catch or not a catch? That whole argument is coming back again. You know, we heard it about last year, Dez Bryant, and now the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears in the middle of a fight there with that one. And then we had a couple of undefeated teams stay that way, the Patriots being one, the Green Bay Packers being another one, and the Denver Broncos, and the Panthers also. Panthers, definitely going to hit on them in our NFL segment. And in our second segment, we're going to talk about the National Football or NCAA football, some quarterback news coming out of Ohio State University, and it's just some wild finish at the Big House, Michigan and Michigan State. We'll talk about that. And just take a look at where teams are here at now the halfway point in the college football season. And in our last segment, we're going to hit on a kind of a story about fans in football, more specifically youth sports, kind of a trend we've seen with parents becoming too invested in their kids on the football field and taking things way too far. We're going to talk about a story from Pittsburgh that happened last week, and that is going to be our show for this afternoon. And I want to start with something that's not really about the NFL or NCAA, just something I feel like I should mention for my local community. There was a man there who died in a car crash this past weekend. His name was Caleb Rummins. And I just wanted to, I went to high school with him, went to elementary school with him, just wanted to say, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to his family and everybody in Healdsburg. He was a great kid, and I always remember him. He was on the Healdsburg football team, and when I was in high school, I was the voice of the Healdsburg football team, and a lot of my most vivid memories behind a microphone will always be the moments I had calling Healdsburg Greyhound football, and I'll always remember all the great plays that Caleb made and all the great things he did in the community as well. Just a sad thing, and I mean, especially for such a great guy, and just wanted to mention that very quickly. Thoughts and prayers go out to all the family and friends of Caleb Reumans. May he rest in peace. All right, so back to the NFL. The National Football League had their Monday Night Football game last night for the week. The Eagles and Giants, a big rivalry in the NFL. It's probably one of the more bitter ones, I would say. I would say definitely historically one of the most bitter ones. I mean, obviously we've seen some newer rivalries pop up over the last couple years, the Colts and Patriots being one who played this week. The 49ers and the Seahawks kind of had that rivalry going. That one's lost a little bit of traction as the Niners have kind of fallen out of relevancy a little bit, but still those teams have some bad blood for each other. But Eagles, Giants, it's a divisional rivalry, and every week and every week those two teams play, it's a tough fought game no matter who, you know, who's doing well or what their records are. And last night, I think everybody was expecting a hard-fought game, you know, played pretty well, especially for what the stakes were, obviously with first place in the division being on the line, but that just was not the case last night. It was an ugly football game from start to finish. The Eagles did come out on top, definitely played better. You got to give credit to their defense. They played pretty well, but it definitely was not a perfect game for the Philadelphia offense. Sam Bradford had three interceptions in that game, and Philadelphia turned the ball over three times in that game as well. Total, just had the three interceptions. But yikes. You know, they still won by three touchdowns, 28-7. The Giants' offense, they marched right down the field on the first possession, and after that, they just couldn't do anything on offense. It seemed like every other play, Eli Manning was on his back and was coughing up the football left and right. Not that that's necessarily his fault. I mean, obviously you got to put some of that blame on his offensive line and the lack of protection and lack of running game as well. But you just can't go on the road and the Giants turn the ball over four times themselves and just shot themselves in the foot time and time again. It wasn't just the turnovers. It seemed like when they weren't making a mistake turning the ball over or allowing a sack, they were having 12 men on the field or an illegal formation penalty or whatever the case may have been. But just kind of a sloppy performance from the Giants, and it lets the Eagles take first place, and sitting at 3-3, the Giants fall to 3-3 as well, but obviously with the Eagles winning, they hold the tiebreaker in that division. And this is a division now that will be wide open, I think, the rest of the way. Even, you know, because you look at all four of these teams, and none of these teams are really jumping off the page at you as a real contender. To me, you know, NFC East, it sounds more like the NFC Least. Kind of a little joke there, and obviously there's a long way to go. There's a lot of football to be played. The Philadelphia offense definitely is looking better. The running game definitely looks better, and for a Chip Kelly coach team, that is definitely a good sign of things to come, because their offense is definitely predicated towards the run. They want to run the football. They have the guys to do it. They have Matthews. They have Sproles. They have DeMarco Murray. And they have an offensive line that's now in the third system with Chip Kelly. And that zone blocking scheme, hopefully, will be able to run, wear teams out. And that's pretty much what Chip Kelly's offense is predicated on. It's not so much like Oregon's offense where he was before, where they expect to put up 55, 60 points plus. It's just not the same game. What they are expecting is for teams' defenses to wear out. And we were seeing some of that last night, a couple of drives, and I heard John Gruden mention it a couple times on the broadcast that The Giants defense was looking tired, hands on their hips, you know, just, you could just tell guys were just sucking wind. They just were like, oh, get me out of here, coach. It was just, you know, that tempo, it's, you know, it's so hard, and it's just the thing of just snap after snap, just boom, 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 just coming after you. And that's, in just wearing that front seven out. And if they can do that well, I think that's a good blueprint to win some football games, especially late in the season when running is at utmost importance. You see it time and time again with teams in the postseason. Even if they are a running team, many times it's a running back that steps up in a running game that steps up, that really pushes teams over the edge. You think about what Willis McGahee did for the Ravens in 2012, what James Starks did for Green Bay in 2010 in their Super Bowl run. Without those guys on those teams, giving those teams that balance that they needed late in the year, they're not in the Super Bowl. They're not. They don't have a Super Bowl trophy sitting in that trophy case. Even though the star that everybody will remember from those teams is Flacco and, of course, Aaron Rodgers for Green Bay. But, you know, so this could be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Also, Tony Romo and Dez Bryant definitely on the mend. Dez Bryant might even be headed back to practice this week. Tony Romo still a couple weeks away, but if the Cowboys can stay close, you got to think that they will be in the mix as well for that division lead. Moving on to some of the other stories from around the NFL. I mentioned the Patriots earlier. The Patriots and Colts got together in another rivalry game, another game that's really in the last 10 years has become a bit of rivalry. It started as Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady, but as Peyton Manning has moved on now to Denver, the rivalry is definitely still there and kind of got renewed last year with the Colts blowing the whistle on the Patriots about the deflation of footballs, and we all know where that led us this offseason. And these two teams got together again at Lucas Oil Stadium, and for a surprise to probably not a lot of people, the Patriots definitely showed why they are the better team, and it was also highlighted by a really kind of peculiar choice to run a very interesting fake punt play where, I mean, everybody's just been kind of jumping on this play's back, just saying, what in the world were they doing? And I kind of have to agree. I mean, I have no idea what type of play they're trying to run. It was a little bit similar to what you may have seen the Oregon Ducks do in the college game, where on the first possession after they score a touchdown, they try to run a play out of their point after attempt, run a two-point conversion where they, you know, line two separate lines of guys on two separate sides of the field. But they don't run it straight up the middle the way the Colts tried to do it, which usually when you line both guys, two sets of guys, you know, one side strong, the other side weak, you try to go to the side where you have an advantage. You know, you see a matchup that you like. You don't try to go into where there was three guys sitting right in front of you. I mean, even if you catch the Patriots off guard, you're going to run right into them. The play just didn't really make a lot of sense. The Patriots, on the other hand, just continue to roll, and I just think that should be more of the story about this game, is regardless of what happened in that play, the Patriots coming off the bye looked fantastic again, and really both sides of the ball. After the first half, the Patriots defense really tightened up. The Colts offense really didn't do much of anything in the second half. It was a shootout in the first half, but second half much better for the New England. And they play the Jets this week, and that to me will be a very interesting matchup. The Jets and the Patriots, another kind of a grudge match from years past. You know, division rivalry, always an interesting game. And the Jets have played pretty good football to this point this season, coming in with a 4-1 record. Chris Ivory running the ball well. Ryan Fitzpatrick being a good game manager, and Brandon Marshall had a nice game last week as well. So a lot of things to look at in the AFC East. And looking at another undefeated team, the Broncos, in one of the better, probably the best game of the weekend, snuck by the Cleveland Browns in overtime. Big win for them. But again, the big story of the game is Peyton Manning not quite looking Peyton Manning-like through a pick six in the game, and now leads the NFL going into their bye week with 10 interceptions so far this season. And that's definitely a major red flag. And, you know, especially when you look at where Peyton Manning is with his age and this probably being his last year, people are wondering, should he have retired last year? Is he have enough in the tank? But before we all go throwing Peyton Manning under the bus here and saying that he's done, he's washed up, I think we should take a step back and look at this more relatively. Just forget the fact that Peyton Manning is possibly the greatest quarterback that ever put on a football uniform. Now, I know there's a lot of people in Foxborough that would probably disagree with that, but, I mean, you got to look at what the man's done, for crying out loud. I mean, the records and the games he's won, and it's not like he's never won a Super Bowl. He's got one, and he beat the Patriots to get there. So, I mean, I've never really got that whole argument of, you know, Peyton Manning's a choker or whatever. But anyways, Peyton Manning this season comes into a brand new system under Gary Kubiak. Now, that's going to challenge almost any quarterback, no matter who he is, in the beginning. You know, and that's it's a new system. It's a lot to learn, and especially when you're going with a system like Gary Kubiak's. It is a fairly hard system to learn, and it's something that he's ran similar. He's been in similar systems of Kubiak's, but, you know, anytime you're in a new offense, it's the new terminologies, it's new ways of doing plays. I mean, every offense is going to be a little bit different. And just the fact that Peyton had to go into a new offense this year, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. And I don't think that learning curve will go on for the entire season, per se, but I definitely think that could be part of what's going on. It's just a little bit different for Peyton, and there's been times this year where Peyton just looks a little bit uncomfortable, looks a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket. And to me, that doesn't say that he's old and washed up and can't throw. I mean, sure, he's not the 22-year-old kid coming out of college in 97 anymore, but he's still a darn good athlete, and he's definitely a good enough athlete to be on the football field. Otherwise, he wouldn't be there. That's, I think, the fact of the matter. If the Broncos legitimately felt that Peyton Manning could not get them to where they need to go as a team, then he wouldn't be the quarterback. Plus, there have been other things going on with the team as well that have been a problem. The running game has been not as good. C.J. Anderson has been a huge disappointment this year, especially how he finished the season last year. And not that this means anything, but he was, people were really high on him in fantasy football. He was, you know, considered a top running back, you know, in the NFL, top tier running back, and he just hasn't delivered. Sure, Ronnie Hillman's done pretty good in his stead. He had a 100-yard game this week, but the running game hasn't been there. The passer protection hasn't been as good as has been in years past. And where Peyton Manning is, he's not a guy that's going to be able to move around in the pocket. Granted, he's going to be able to step up and move around well to avoid some pressure, but, I mean, being where he is, he's not going to be Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or Colin Kaepernick. He's not going to be able to just run away from pressure. You know, he's a pretty much a pocket passer exclusively. He might be able to roll out a little bit, but the more he's on the move and out of the pocket, the less accurate Peyton Manning is going to be. So here are the two things I think Denver can do better. Denver, they can protect Manning a little bit better, and they can run the football a little bit better. And I think that will go a long way to Denver continuing their success. I mean, that defense is good enough to get them anywhere. It's just a matter of execution, and I really think that after the bye week, and we'll see right away, is their first game after the bye week is against Green Bay, but I think after the bye week, we might see a completely rejuvenated number 18, and for the NFL's sake, I hope we do. You know, he's a marquee player, and I think it makes the NFL a way more interesting sport to, you know, thing to cover with Peyton Manning playing at his best, especially when you got a Broncos versus Patriot matchup in there as well. It'd be cool to see Manning versus Brady with both of them at the in their prime one last time. And one last undefeated team I wanted to hit on, the Carolina Panthers. Wow, that was a great win this past weekend with going up to the link and beating the Seattle Seahawks, something a team hadn't done since last season when the Dallas Cowboys went into the CenturyLink Field and kind of got a season-defining win for them. And I see this win for Carolina similar to what Dallas got last year. You know, people weren't sure who Dallas was as a team going into that game, and people were a little bit skeptical about them. Same thing with the Panthers. People didn't see them as a contender, and people had, you know, legitimate questions about them. As you know, you just look at the men they have on the outside on their roster, and they just have a lack of weapons, you know, and Greg Olsen is your number one target. Not that there's anything wrong with Greg Olsen. He's a great receiver, but a great tight end, I should say, but he shouldn't be a number one target in your offense. But yet, here they are, and it is season-defining win for them, and I think this definitely raises some eyebrows in the NFC, and this definitely puts them right on the map in the, not just the NFC South, but in the NFC in general. And I think it's all on the arm of Cam Newton, number one. Literally number one, not just figuratively. But, you know, Cam Newton, I think, has made that next step. He's not that young buck anymore. He still does the celebrations and he does the Superman thing, but he's not that same young kid coming out of Auburn where people were shaking their heads over him. You know, he wasn't mature enough. He wasn't doing the things that needed to be done. That's not the case anymore. This kid can play, and he is playing like a veteran, as he should be. He's been in the league now for a couple years. He's getting his feet underneath him, and you know, granted, he didn't have his best game statistically on Sunday, but when it mattered the most in the last 8 or so minutes of that game in Seattle, Cam Newton showed up and he basically put his team on his back and said, "Hey guys, let's go. You know, I'm gonna will our team to a win." And granted, the Seahawks had a few issues, like the touchdown with 30 seconds to Olsen to clinch the game. I thought the picture with Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman was just so telling. There was a picture, I believe it was in either in USA Today or the New York Times, where it showed pictured from the back of the end zone of Olsen with his hands in the air, like celebrating, and it showed Sherman and Chancellor like with both of their hands in the air, like looking at each other in confusion. So there was definitely some type of a defensive lapse, and that's been some of the problem for Seattle at this point, is they sit at 2-4, and there's a team that's got to be really careful and not have a letdown, especially traveling to San Francisco this week. Definitely a trap game, especially with it being on a Thursday night. You can always have a little bit of trouble playing on Thursday. It can be, you know, it's just kind of ugly. And one last thing before we go to the break, just a note on the rule. There was a catch in the Detroit Lion and Chicago Bear game. Congratulations to the Lions. They were able to pick up their first win of the year. There's now no teams left defeated. I was about to say undefeated, but I kind of got my words mixed up a little bit there. There's no teams that are left defeated in the NFL. Every NFL team now has a victory. And in the game, there was a play where Golden Tate caught a ball and seemed to lose possession of it, and the ball flew up in the air, and one of the Bear defenders reached up, caught it, and it was called a touchback. They went back and reviewed the play, and it was reversed to a touchdown. And I just, I think that little sound effect probably represents how I kind of feel about this, because this rule just will not go away, and I don't get it. Why can't the NFL just come up with a concrete way to classify what is a catch or not? It seems like a pretty basic concept, and we keep seeing this problem over and over and over again, and it's not going to go away until the NFL does something about it. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, it just doesn't match up. I mean, we saw the play 2 weeks ago with Devontae Freeman going into the end zone, seemingly a shoe-in for a touchdown and reaching the ball over the goal line. And it looks like the ball broke the plane of the goal line, but he didn't keep possession all the way. So they called it not a touchdown. And Golden Tate seemed to be the same thing. He had the ball going across the goal line, but lost the ball in the middle of the process of going to the ground. Ball pops in the air, and the Bears intercept it. Seemed like a very similar concept, but it was called the other way. Now, I don't think the Dez Bryant play is in this category, because Dez Bryant, A, wasn't scoring a touchdown on the play, and B, the ball did hit the ground. So, I mean, I don't see the same argument with that play, but there definitely needs to, but the fact of the matter is that there definitely needs to be more of a clarification of what is a catch and what isn't. And I mean, it's going to be a tough thing for the NFL to figure out, but I definitely think it is something that is very necessary, because I just don't want to see another tuck play, or, you know, a tuck rule play where a game is just completely ruined by one play in a really important game. And that would really be the NFL's worst nightmare as well. I mean, geez, let's just have another PR fiasco. That sounds really great, doesn't it? All right, so we are up against it here. We are going to take a quick break. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. And when we come back, we're going to go to campus and talk some NCAA football. So don't go anywhere.
Hey, kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. Make sure you stay tuned. Uncovered with DJ Soundwave is coming your way next from 5 to 6 p.m. She will be going over everything in the world of YouTube cover artists, so make sure you stay tuned for that one. We just wrapped up a segment talking about the NFL, but all the major news and notes happening from around the league. And now we are headed on campus. We're going to be talking about some college football. We're at the halfway point in the college football season, and we have yet to see too many teams really establish themselves as true championship contenders to this point. But the team that is ranked number one at this point in the season has made a big move at quarterback. News coming out today that JT Barrett, quarterback for the Buckeyes, sophomore, has been named the starter. This week they will be playing up in New Jersey, up at Rutgers University. Rutgers took Michigan State 2 weeks ago to the brink. Michigan State needed to pull a rabbit out of the hat to get that one, so maybe a trap game for the Buckeyes coming up this week, but it shouldn't be too big of a surprise. The offense just has been better with Barrett in the lineup. It's been more efficient, seems more crisp, and really just consistency. And when Urban Meyer was asked about that today, asked about the change at quarterback, he talked about it was just a quote, part it was just all about production and just what the two quarterbacks have done on the field. The one statistic I found that was most, you know, showing of where this offenses have gone under the two quarterbacks is you look at the two quarterbacks' red zone completion percentage, which efficiency in the red zone is the most important place to get efficiency on a football field, and JT Barrett has completed over 80% of his passes in the red zone, which is fantastic. That's really good. At any level, that's fabulous. If you're really playing your best football inside the 20 and you're getting some touchdowns, then that's really good. But Cardell Jones, on the other hand, has completed less than 50% of his passes in the red zone, which on the other end of the spectrum raises a red flag. And it is a pretty telling story of where this Ohio State team has been offensively. We've seen them make really, really great plays. You know, thinking back to week one with some of the plays they made against Virginia Tech, with Braxton Miller having that really great spin move and a touchdown, and Zeke Elliott having multiple really nice runs, a huge game against the Indiana Hoosiers to will them to a win. And, you know, we've seen the skill position players and who they have on the field. I mean, Dontre Wilson, the list goes on and on of how good this team is. But Cardell Jones just seems like he's just been a little inconsistent. They'll make this big play and then, and have a great drive. And then the next three drives, they'll go three and out. Or Cardell Jones will have two or three really nice throws, but then he'll come back and he'll throw a dud and he'll throw an interception. And you've seen that in their offense. We've seen multiple games where this Ohio State team has struggled in games that they frankly should not have struggled in. They should have blown, no disrespect to Northern Illinois, but they should have blown them out of the water. They should have been able to easily beat the Indiana Hoosiers, especially because the Hoosiers were playing without their starting quarterback for the majority of that game. They had the backup in the entire second half. So I definitely think this is the right move. And if I were Urban Meyer, I would stop beating around the bush and just pick one quarterback. End this controversy once and for all. Come out and say, this is our guy, and he is taking us to the natty, or we're going up in smoke. And because it's just ruining their team continuity. Which quarterback should the team rally around? You know, but your quarterback is your leader. He's the guy that you go to war with. He's the guy calling the plays, throwing the touchdown passes. And when you're a team that's like Ohio State and you have national title aspirations, the smallest little distraction in the locker room can knock everything off balance. And having a QB riff in the locker room is not what you want to have. You want to have one guy that's leading your team, one voice, you know, one guy wearing the captain stamp on the jerseys, even though Ohio State doesn't really do that. But I really hope, for the sake of the Buckeyes and their fans, that if Urban Meyer thinks JT Barrett is the guy, that he's going to stick with them for the rest of the season, because I think that will go a long way to their success in the long run. And looking at some of the other teams as we're at the halfway point that are really playing well, the Utah Utes, they had another big win this week against Arizona State. Arizona State challenged them, actually had the lead going into halftime, but the Utes came out in the second half and really pulled away and played well. And you look at what they've done this season, Travis Wilson definitely has to be the biggest reason for their success. I mean, Devontae Booker is obviously the catalyst of the team. He is their most talented skill player, and him running the football is a big key to their offense. But I think Travis Wilson giving him that balance on offense has been the biggest key. I mean, you look at him completing close to 70% of his passes. He hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions. He manages the game extremely well, and he gives teams just that other element to worry about. And let's not forget that Travis Wilson is a pretty good athlete himself, even though he's a big guy, over 6'6", I believe 6'7", or 6'8", really a big dude, but he can run. Remember from the game against the Ducks earlier in the season, he was actually the leading rusher for the Utes that day at over 100 yards rushing. So he can do a lot of great things, and you look at the Utes, where they're headed, they definitely have a schedule that's manageable. Some of those teams that are left on there, the Wildcats haven't been what people thought they were going to be. They've been injury-plagued. UCLA Bruins, they've had a couple of rough weeks. They're not the top 10 team like we thought they could be. The Trojans, USC Trojans, I don't think I have to say a word about where they're at and the struggles they've had. I mean, geez, talk about the worst timing in the world. You lose your coach a week before you play, you go through a tough stretch. You play at Notre Dame, and then you come back the very next week and you play against Utah. And granted, it's in the Coliseum, but still, Utah's the number 3 ranked team in the nation and are really talented on both sides of the football, and it's going to take an absolutely fabulous effort on USC's part just to have a chance in that game. And looking at another undefeated making noise, the Baylor Bears, it's been kind of surprising to me. They've almost kind of done it under the radar. There isn't really all that much talk about the Baylor Bears, and even though they just keep dominating, just their offense just keeps rolling. And the one thing you got to look at with Baylor is, the one thing that's definitely different from what we've seen in the past is their defense. Their defense isn't just a sad excuse, you know, and just hoping that they can hold the team under 50. That team, you know, they got some talented players on that side of the ball, and to me, that makes them 100 times more dangerous. You know, I'm not sure why this seems to be a trend. You see programs that have really good offenses, like Texas Tech, Baylor, Oregon being another one, that don't have, you know, great defenses to back it up. Now, granted, a lot of these teams' defenses haven't been bad per se, like Oregon seemingly before this year was with the champions of the bend don't break defense, that they'd give up a lot of yards but don't give up a lot of points. But I think Baylor having a better defense, you know, better than average defense, will definitely go a long way for their success, because we've seen in the past these juggernaut offenses aren't just going to be able to come into the playoff and expect to score 60 points a game. The game's going to change a lot when they get to that point, and they're going to have to find some different ways to win, and this might be a different way. You know, who knows? Maybe Baylor's defense will be able to step up. And just and the other team, the Big 12, look at TCU. The whole question with TCU is, how far can Trevon Boykin take this team? And it's an interesting question. And, you know, it's definitely something interesting this week. We saw it's kind of gone viral that in the coin toss this past weekend in Iowa State, Iowa State sent an honorary member out to the coin toss. It was a young girl with, I believe it was cerebral palsy. And Boykin took the time during the current coin toss to kind of bend over and just kind of talk to the young girl and, you know, and just, you know, shook her hand. And, you know, in the midst of a football game like that, I think that shows, you know, pretty good showing of character right there by that young man. And, you know, it should be something I think we should definitely take note of. And especially when you look at the Heisman race, even though that's probably too early to be looking at the Heisman race. The Heisman should be about character. It shouldn't just be about what you've done on the football field. Now, if we're looking just at what they've done on the football field, Leonard Fournette would absolutely be the pick for the Heisman at this point. But things like this from Boykin, I think, kind of show that more, you know, the character of the player. Not that Fournette hasn't been shown great character himself. I mean, we saw after that game a couple weeks ago with South Carolina, where South Carolina had to move the game from LSU or from South Carolina to LSU because of the hurricane and all of the floodings that were happening over in South Carolina. Leonard Fournette offered to donate his to sell his jersey and donate the money all to a charity for South Carolina, which seems like a pretty noble thing to do. Obviously, the NCAA didn't think so, as they saw that it would be a violation for him to do that. I mean, come on. When is this thing with the NCAA going to stop? I mean, it's such a joke, isn't it? Man, give me a break. The kid tried to do something for charity, and it's like, no, you can't do that. You can't sell your uniform. It's like, no, he wasn't trying to be Johnny Manziel. He wasn't trying to make any money off of it. He was trying to do something good for the community, and shouldn't that be more important? You know, even if it is technically breaking a rule to do it for money, if he's doing it for the right reason, hell, let him do it. I mean, to me, it's just kind of a ridiculous thing to fight, and who knows if it'll ever change or if the NCAA will ever kind of clean up its act. But the site will definitely be a sight to behold if they do actually end up doing something. All right, we are two segments into our show. It is right around 4:45. When we come back from this break, we're going to get into a story about youth football and parents of youth football players interacting in sometimes inappropriate ways with the referees and with themselves. So, kind of an interesting story, an interesting topic. You're listening to Chalk Talk. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some youth football. So, stay with us.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Josh Groban. My favorite thing about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just got done talking some college football, kind of wrapping up the middle of the college football season. This is kind of a light week for college football action. Not a whole lot of marquee matchups this week. College Game Day kind of taking advantage of that. They're heading to an obscure place. They're going to be at Division II James Madison University this weekend. So I guess turn up James Madison. Get ready to party. Game Day, that's a fun deal. Me being a Oregon University of Oregon alumni, I've been to Game Day a couple times. It's a cool thing, you know. It's cool to see all the crazy sets and all the, you know, the $10,000 cameras, and you know, you get to see Desmond Howard, a Heisman Trophy winner, and Samantha Ponder. Oh boy, I won't get too Brent Musburger-y talking about her, if you know what I mean. Anyway, we're going to get into a kind of an interesting topic here in our last segment. I kind of hinted at it a couple times. Story that came in from last Friday, a story about a youth football league in a suburb of Pittsburgh that has had to cancel their season because of conduct by parents in the stands and conduct with parents with the officials. And officials have been getting threats from parents, and it's gone as far as referees getting sent empty shotgun shell casings with like "die referee" and like messages like that written on them. It's like, where are we? Are we in Brazil? Like Brazilian football where referees' heads get cut off? Like, what is this, anarchy? Give me a break. We're in the United States of America, people. This stuff should not be happening. And not that just because stuff like that's happening in Brazil, not that there's anything, you know, you get what I'm trying to say there. But this is just ridiculous. And let's not forget, I mean, this is a league of the kids' ages range from 6 to 14. And couple of quotes from the kids. I mean, they're not old enough to understand this stuff. They're just unhappy that they don't get to play football anymore. And, you know, and they're disappointed about not getting a chance to compete. And for a little kid, I mean, it hasn't been all that long ago since I was playing youth sports. For a kid, when your football league, you know, your local football league, that's your Super Bowl. You know, you love that. And you have great memories from playing youth sports. I always remember playing you know, Little League baseball when I was a kid, and, you know, playing. I always remember this. I remember this Little League team. We were the Hillsburg Cubs, and this, you know, this, we had this really amazing manager, and she did a great job with us, and, you know, it, you know, just memories from that literally will last a lifetime. And these kids are not going to have that opportunity because parents decided that they were going to get so angry about a call made in a football game involving 12-year-olds. I mean, come on, like, what's really at stake here? Even if it was the NFL, if it was the Iron Bowl in college football, or if it was a game that had really high stakes, this type of behavior just is not acceptable at any level. We saw that also this week, and speaking of players being treated incorrectly, with that play that happened this weekend, I'm sure everybody has seen it at this point, between the Michigan State, where the Michigan State, or excuse me, the Michigan special teams unit had a really big snafu. They're a botched punt. The punter just completely screwed the play up, and I mean, just a catastrophic ending for Michigan. You know, the Michigan State runs the recovered punt back into the end zone as time expires to win the game, and then the response on social media, just people attacking this punter in the same way with death threats and all this nasty stuff. It even forced the Michigan athletic director to send out an email to the entire student body addressing this issue. And it just shouldn't happen. I mean, these guys are football players. This isn't life or death. I mean, part of what makes sports fun, you know, and makes it fun to watch is to have your opinion about it and, you know, to be the Monday morning quarterback, so to speak, you know, to have these conversations. Oh, who do you think's going to be the best, and, you know, and why? And it's part of the reason why me and a lot of other people are going to have a job, because people talk about these things. But there definitely is a fine line here. And I think sometimes in our society, it happens a little bit too much that reality, life, gets kind of mixed in with sports. And I understand how sports can be a huge part of someone's life, but sports do not define anyone's life entirely. You almost, I mean, anyone should have things in their life that are more important than football. You know, whether it's faith or your wife or your mom, your dad, your sister, your best friend, your dog, something. I mean, it's just football, it's not healthy for it to be the only thing. And that's what I think a lot of people are kind of losing sight of. They're forgetting that football is a game, and it's for entertainment. And at the end of the day, even if you lose in the national championship, sure, you're going to be disappointed and it's going to sting for a while, but, you know, when you wake up the next day, you should just brush it off and keep continuing to live your life and not dwell on what happened during a game. And that's what's happened here with these parents from these poor kids. And, you know, you look at it too, I kind of see this a little bit similarly to what happened to the Chicago Little League baseball team last year too, who had their Little League championship taken away. Is that these kids don't understand the mistakes that their parents are making. They don't, you know, they can't fully wrap their heads around it yet. I mean, these kids, the oldest kids that are in this league are 14 years old, and for any of you that are listening that have kids out there, you probably have a good idea of how mature a 14-year-old is. And even me, looking back in hindsight, like, I had a lot of stuff to learn at 14, and I have become a completely different person from when I was 14 years old. So with that point, that why punish these kids? I mean, all they want to do is go out on a football field and play and have fun, and that's what it should be about. And especially at that age, you know, sports should be all about having fun and, you know, and learning you know, teamwork and camaraderie and pride and how to work hard and all of these things that you can, positive things that you can learn from sports, you should be doing that. And if you can win some games along the way, great. But if not, it's not the end of the world, you know? And there's been plenty of people that have been not successful in youth sports that have gone on to do great things, even in professional sports. I mean, the one really famous example is Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't even, I think it was his junior varsity basketball team, he didn't even make the team when he was in high school. And look, he's the best basketball player to ever play. Sorry, LeBron, but you will never be the best basketball player to ever play. But that's just my opinion with that. But still, it really kind of grinds my gears when I see stuff like this in sports. And I don't think there should be any room for it in sports. If you want to be something like that, then, and do something that's detrimental to your community, then you should get off the football field and don't come back, because it's a privilege for someone to be able to play sports. There's a lot of people that don't have the opportunity to play sports for whatever reason that would happily take the place of some person that's just being so inconsiderate. But at the same time, it wouldn't be fair to kick out a kid if his dad is just going crazy in the stands. And it's just, I mean, this has just been something that's been a problem for a long time. You know, parents in sports, it's, you know, it is a little bit of a tough subject. You know, you see a lot of parents that are afraid to say something in the stands because they're afraid of getting looked at, you know, especially in this day and age where anybody with a cell phone can film something and boom, and can go viral at any point. It's just a different time, and it's a subject I think we just need to kind of address and just get rid of it. I mean, I think we've all probably been at a high school football game or a CYO basketball game, and watching watching Johnny or Claire from down the street, you know, playing in a game. And, you know, if the ref makes a bad call, you might boo him and give him a bad time. But, and that's part of sports, you know, that's part of fun. But again, there's a line there, you know, just a line that you just shouldn't cross. And there's really no need to cross it either. And just, I think we just need to be a little bit smarter with our words and what we're doing. And remember that, hey, I mean, the end result of playing sports is to have fun. So let's just focus on doing that. And if we can win some games doing it, then more power to us. All right. We are out of time here on Chalk Talk. It's been another great Tuesday talking to you guys. We'll be back next Tuesday with another edition of Chalk Talk. Until then, I'm Jeff Safford, and you're listening to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, and I'll see you next week. Have a great night, everybody.